is heavy on my mind. So as my feelings unwind, I find that some try to be down just cause it's trendy. Others fall victim to envy. But I'll take the road less traveled, so I can see all my hopes and my dreams unravel. Relieving your stress, expressing my interest in the situation that you're facing. That's
why. Welcome to Voices from the Frontline segment on the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. My name is Damon Azali, and I'm here with my co-host Eric Mann. We wanted to start today's show to dedicate it to the memory of Shafiq Handal, who is the former presidential candidate and leader of the Farabando Martí National Liberation Front, or the FMLN, of El Salvador. He died last Tuesday, January 24th. So we have an exciting show for you today. First, we'll start off with author Joe Berry, who joins us in studio to discuss his latest book, Reclaiming the Ivory Tower, Organizing Adjuncts to Change Higher Education. Then after that, we'll be joined by our co-hosts. We miss them. They've been gone for a couple weeks. Tam Banglu and Manuel Criollo with their firsthand accounts and reports from the World Social Forum in Caracas, Venezuela. And for our final segment, we'll be talking to Dr. Ruth Gilmore, who is a longtime prison activist, and she will be discussing with us Governor Schwarzenegger's recent bid to build almost 100,000 new jail cells in California over the next 5 years. So we're right here in the studio with Eric.
Hey, Joe. We're here with Joe Berry. I was a regional organizer and traveler for the Students for Democratic Society in Boston, New England, and Joe was an organizer with SDS in Iowa. And he's been a long-time faculty member, but he's been who he's been trying to organize, which is essentially contingent labor, sometimes full-time, sometimes part-time, but never tenured. So the reason we have Joe on the show, besides the fact that Surin Moodlier, his friend, is a very good organizer and called us up and said, get Joe on the show, and we said, sure, is he's got a new book, Reclaiming the Ivory Tower, Organizing Adjuncts to Change Higher Education. And as we talked before the show, he indicated there's an actual movement of non-tenured faculty. I know a lot about it, but why don't you tell our viewers a little bit of overview of the problem and a little bit of the movement.
Well, hi.
Nice to
have
you
here. Thank you. Since the 1970s, non-tenure track faculty have become the majority of people teaching college classes in the United States, little known to the people who are taking the classes, because we all look like professors. They get to pay the same tuition and get the same credits, but we're people generally working for less than half the pay and with no benefits, and mostly on a semester-to-semester part-time basis, although some people have full-time year-to-year contracts. And that transition has taken place over the course of just one generation of workers, which is one of the quickest rates of casualization of an entire profession in the entire workforce. I guess taxi cab drivers are another one in that category, but mostly they've taken place slowly. So this is a real kind of a laboratory for casualization and as the corporatization of the universities has continued.
Well, tell us a little bit about the movement, and then I'm going to ask you later about some of the problems you got, but can you organize? One of the problems, of course, is people with more tenure are easy to organize because they're less worried. People who are more, quote, casual, no benefits, part-time. Mm-hmm. Here we call them freeway flyers.
Right.
They sometimes teach at Cal State Northridge, Cal State Fullerton, and Cal State L.A.
And three community colleges,
and
too.
And three community colleges, too, stringing together a living. Can those people be organized, or are they more vulnerable to the actual loss of the very job they still need?
They are more vulnerable, but they can be organized. The news is there is a movement, and when people fight, they win. In all the times there have been union elections among part-time temporaries, there's only one case since the 60s where people have voted against the union when they get a secret ballot election. Now, people are scared, and it's hard to get people actively involved. It's hard to get people to be public. But when people get a chance to vote for a union in a secret ballot election, they always do. We never lose. And by building an organization and continuing an organization, that's the big and winning, significant improvements in conditions, building movement, in other words, public movement, that's the big challenge. but it's happening.
My daughter's at NYU. She's a graduate student at the Gallatin College. She had to organize some of her own faculty to not cross the picket lines and wrote some amazing letters on behalf of, I believe, they were teaching assistants. Do you know about that strike? And can you tell us, give us an example of something in the real world that's happening along with your theory of reclaiming the ivory tower with Joe Barry?
Well, that's, you know, a big segment of those who are teaching who don't have job security are graduate assistants in the four-year universities with PhD programs and now even MA programs. And this is the longest strike of folks like that that's gone on. It's going into its second semester now because they tried to take away the contract that existed and because of a really bad court and NLRB decision that declared them all students and not employees, recently reversed a better decision that was done a few years ago. And these folks are the real heroes of the movement. The adjuncts, the non-graduate contingent folks, have also organized at NYU recently and very nearly had to strike to get a contract themselves. And the same was the case with folks at the New School and other private universities. That's the real new frontier of the movement. Two private universities in Chicago were organized in the last 5 years. But those guys resist. And the for-profits we haven't touched yet, the University of Phoenix's and the DeVries and places like that.
So, Joe, I think it's pretty safe to say KPFK listeners care about workers' rights. I guess the question I would say, why should they really care about workers' rights? What relation does this sex struggle actually have in relation to the broader society, broader community?
Well, number one, it's huge numbers. We're talking about more than 500,000 folks. There's more contingent faculty than there are steel workers in the United States today. So it's big numbers. That's one thing. Number two, it's a laboratory for the casualization of the workforce. So it's important in that way because it's happening in lots and lots of vocations and jobs and everything. And the other reason is we're strategically placed. We talk for a living. And most of us talk to working people for a living, right? I mean, most higher education is no longer an elite phenomenon, you know. Over half the people who graduate from high school go to some kind of post-secondary education. So most of us, especially in the community colleges, are teaching working people. So if we can win job security and hence academic freedom and the right to speak the truth as we see it to students from what is really now a working class position that we're sitting in, right? We're no longer the privileged tenure track professors. You know, that's a tremendously powerful place if people have a message and an alliance there that, that could really not just change higher education, but have an impact in the whole society, I think.
Well, talk about, I have two questions before we go, Joe. First is, in a consumer society, do the students really give a damn? I mean, they still see you as more privileged. They just, as you say, I don't know if you're wearing a suit, you talk, you're a professor. I come from a more working class background. I just grade my paper, whether you have a TA or not, that's your problem. We're not living at a time when there's a lot of empathy. So what's the dilemma, since a lot of the winning of the strike depends on the students' response to the strike? Aren't a lot of students crossing the picket line or just saying, you know, good luck to you in the market?
Well, that's probably true at NYU, but NYU is not, I mean, I'm sure that is true to a certain extent at NYU, but NYU is not typical of higher education. PhD granting universities are not typical of higher education. Most, the prototypical higher education student is a non-Anglo single mother in a California community college. That's the single biggest group. That's the prototypical student. And even across the country, a working class woman is the prototypical college student today.
That doesn't mean she would care either.
No, but there's a basis to appeal to common interests there that is different than an upper middle class person paying huge tuition at a private prestigious university. And our experience has been that students are very supportive, partly because our working conditions are their learning conditions. If we have no job security, they can't look and see who their professor is going to be. It's listed staff, you know, on the thing.
Right.
Or TBA,
right,
to be announced.
Well, I had a bunch of those.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you're a smart student, you take teachers, not just subjects. But you can't do that with us.
Exactly.
We don't keep office hours. We run out the door to the next class. I mean, it hurts the students. It hurts education. In addition to our not having academic freedom, and people having to look over their shoulder all the time in terms of what they say.
Well, Joe, you have a great ability to speak directly. That's because you didn't start as an academic. You started as an organizer, so you weren't polluted. Glad to see it. And your book, Reclaiming the Ivory Tower, Organizing Adjuncts to Change Higher Education by Joe Berry. Tell us your last chances. You're in L.A. I read some of your website. You were talking about speaking at a lot of places.
Right.
Often the audiences were not as big as you wanted. I know the feeling. Often you said, but almost everybody saw the book. I know the feeling. So tell us how to buy the book. Do you have any events in L.A.? Are you tell us about your website. Do a little people's marketing for us.
Okay. Well, the website is the title of the book, ReclaimingTheIvoryTower.org. And you can order it through there. That's the cheapest place. And it's $10. And then there's a dialogue in that website, too, a little blog and some invitations of people to go back and forth. And I'm down here. I did a thing with the Union of Faculty, the Lecturers Committee, the non-tenure-track folks who teach in the California State University system just a couple days ago, and I'm going to be out at Victor Valley on Thursday at a couple of events, one at noon at Barnes & Noble out there, and then on the campus later on in the afternoon. And then Friday I'm going to be at a conference of what they call an apart-time summit of people from primarily the community colleges all over the state. And I come back periodically because I have relatives and friends in Southern California, and I lived in San Francisco for many years.
Well, thanks, Joe. And one of the things, I just opened it up, it says Guide for National Strategy. One of the things about the politics of list, organizing by clout, competitive unionism, good, better, and different for contingent faculty. I think people should know that this is almost, I would say, half about the actual problems of the faculty and half about building a movement. So it's a very good, if you're tired of just critique, which I am,
yeah.
This is a very good book. So one more time, Joe, the website is?
ReclaimingTheIvoryTower.org.
Okay. Joe Berry, nice to have you here. So you go back to Iowa, I'll go back to Boston, I'll see you on the campus trail.
Thank you.
All right.
This is Damon Azali and Eric Mann with Joe Berry, who's the author of Reclaiming the Ivory Tower. We'll be right back with Tammy Banglu and Manuel Criollo from Venezuela.